Let's change our prayer verse. First verse here. Prayer verse. Repeat after me. Om Jnana Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Nirvanam. Om Jnana Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Nirvanam. Parashishtante Vasadvrishikanayaravritam Brahma Nishtai. Parashishtante Vasadvrishikanayaravritam Brahma Nishtai. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramananda Murtim. Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramananda Murtim. Swatmaramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Swatmaramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Let's go to the new handout to verse 4. Nana Chidra Gatodara.
Nana Chidra Gatodara.
Stita Mahadipa Prabhabhaswaram. Stita Mahadipa Prabhabhaswaram. Jnanam Yasya Tu Chakshuradi.
Jnanam Yasya Tu Chakshuradi.
Karanadvara Bahispandate.
Karanadvara
Bahispandate. Janami Titameva Bhantam.
Janami Titameva Bhantam.
Anubhatye Tatsamastam Jagata. Anubhatye Samastam Jagata. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Sandhi. Nana Chidra Gata Gata Udara Stitta Maha Deepa Prabha Baswaram. This is a compound, one word compound. So Nana Chidra Gatodara Stitta Maha Deepa Prabha Baswaram. Then Jnanam Yasya Tu Chakshu. It's actually Chakshuhu Adi Karana Dwara Bahihi Spandate. Janami Iti Tam Eva Bhantam Anubhati Etat Samastam Jagat. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtiye Nama Idam Shri Dakshinamurti. So this famous example. Nana means many and varied. Chidra are holes in something. So the chidra, holes in something, many and varied holes, okay, that are holes in something. But what are the holes in? A gutta, a pot. A pot which has many and varied holes in it. Okay, so nana, chidra, gata, udara means inside. Now, so that gata, so inside, it just means in the belly, in the inside of it. Stitta means abiding, placed there. Maha means great, maha deepa, like a great lamp, a big lamp. Maha deepa, prabha baswaram. Or you take like this, baswaram means that which is shining. Prabha, that which is brilliantly prabha. Prabha baswara means brilliantly shining. Brilliant light, prabha. Of a lamp. of a great lamp. Maha Deepa Prabha Bhaswaram, the brilliant bright shining of a lamp, a deepa, and maha means a great lamp, big lamp, or you can say that great brilliant shining. Usually you put it with deepa, maha deepa. So a powerful lamp. So here, powerful light, powerful candle flame back then. No electricity. So this says, you know, a bright light, a great bright light placed in the belly of a pot, placed in the belly of a pot, which has many and varied holes, nana chidra, many and varied holes in it. Okay? Then, jnanam, knowledge, whose knowledge, for whose knowledge, whose consciousness, chakshuradi karana dwara bahispandate. So here, the second line, whose consciousness, spandate, lights up or illumines, as though outside, dwara, is shines outside. So whose consciousness shines outside, chakshu adi karana dwara. Through the sense organs, karana means organs, so the sense organs, beginning with the eyes. Okay. So here, they don't have an eva, but eva is understood. So whose consciousness shines outside, shines outside through the means of knowledge, beginning with the eyes, through the sense organs beginning with the eyes, like a bright light, like the bright flame of a lamp, of a big lamp, which is placed inside of a pot. The pot has holes in it, right? And so if the pot didn't have any holes in it, that lamp would be in there, but nobody would see it, especially if it had a lid on it, because no holes. But if it has holes, then the rays of that light are going to come out of the holes. So like that, inside, as the dehi, as the one who's indwelling this body from the standpoint of the body, this conscious being that I am, the light, the consciousness, the light of my own being, shines as though out through the holes of the five sense organs. So the light radiates out through the five sense organs. Also internally, it illumines the mind. Right? It illumines the mind, all of the buddhi vrittis. But then through the sense organs, it as though shoots out into the world, lighting up the world. That's the example. So then it says, "Janami iti tameva bhantam." Anubhati etat samastam. So it says, tameva bhantam anubhati etat samastam jagata. Etat, so we have to go like this. Etat, this samastam, entire jagat. This entire universe, the whole time-space universe, everything that exists within time and space, the entire universe shines after anubhati. It shines after the shining, which is that alone. When it says that alone, what are they referring to? That alone which shines as Janami. I know, I know, I know, I know. That consciousness, that conscious being, yasya jnanam, whose jnanam, the word jnanam, you usually just take as knowledge, but jnanam can also mean the knowledge which is consciousness, or it can mean, depending upon how you break up the word, the etymology of the word, it can be the consciousness itself. It can be the knower. Jnanam can be the one who is knowing. Jnanam itself has these two forms of being what we call the kartra, the knower, or the knowing, or the knowledge. Right? And so here, jnanam is often used like satyam jnanam anantam brahma. That jnanam doesn't mean the knowledge or the knower. It means the knowledge, the conscious being itself, the knownness, the self-evident knownness of my being. So here, whose knowledge, whose consciousness, as though shines outside through the sense organs. Then the next line is said, it says, this entire jagat, etat samastam jagat, anubhati shines after that alone which is shining, that alone which is shining, as janami. Janami means I say, as the subject here, the subject-object relationship, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know. But the shining for the one who says I know is the self-evident conscious being, which is me. So if I say I know, I am the one who is knowing, everything shines after that. When everything shines after that, meaning that all of the things which I illumine are not self-evident. They require to be illumined in order to be known. Like in a simple example, if it's dark out and we turn out all of the lights, then none of these things are illumined. They don't shine from their own standpoint. They have to be lit up. They have to be lit up by the pramanas, by the means of knowledge. And also, we can use the drishtanta of the sun. If the sun is not lighting them up or a luminary is not lighting them up, then they're just in the dark, not available to be experienced because they're not self-evident. Consciousness is self-evident. And so consciousness is like this lamp that is coming out of the holes of the upadi, the holes in the form of the sense organs. But it is this lamp of consciousness which I identify as me. Right. So when I say I am knowing, I'm actually identifying with the self-evident consciousness, which then is reflected in the mind, which then forms vrittis, brought about by the sense organs going outside through the orifices of the sense organs into the world, lighting up the world so that it can be perceived by me. They're not self-evident. Otherwise, each thing would be self-shining. It wouldn't require pramana. Self-evident. There's only one thing that's self-evident, self-shining, that's consciousness. So here he says, like, this is the thing where he says, just a little bit more on why I said janami iti, as I know. If we say this whole world, this entire world, shines after that which is shining, we could as well take that to be the sun, right? Just within samsara, within the universe, the sun shining, everything is lit up. Unless it's night. During the day, with the sun shining, because the sun is shining, everything else shines after that. It requires the light of the sun for it to be illumined. Not illumined of its own accord. But there's another luminary, and that is the luminary of consciousness, which lights up the sun. Right? The sun is not self-luminous in reference to consciousness. So for instance, if it's in the middle of the night or I'm away from the sun is not being lit up for me. But the consciousness, the conscious being that I am, lights up everything that comes in its wake. And so if I'm looking at the sun is lit up for me. So we're talking about here the conscious being, which in the end is the luminary for everything, is the luminary and everything else shines after it. Including the sun, including the day, including the night. It's another example that we use. The night is not lit up. The night is dark, right? And in fact, in the night, nothing can be perceived unless you have another luminary on, but say we don't have any candles and we don't have any electricity, you know, and it's a cloudy sky, the sun is on the other side of the world, it is dark, right? And so nothing is lit up. Because of the darkness. But the darkness is lit up by me. I illumine the darkness, right? The darkness puts a cover over all objectifiable experiences that my eyes need. All the things that I can see are not available for me, right? When it's really dark. And so all of those things depend upon the sun to be illumined so that my eyes can see them. So the darkness itself is like an agnanam. It's like as though a covering that stops me from being able to appreciate what is there. But for me, from the standpoint of myself, I illumine even the darkness. That's why I can say, it's dark out. Okay? You say, it's dark out. How do you know it's dark out? How do you know that? Right? How do you know that? Is because your eyes are working just fine. Your eyes are working just fine. And what they perceive is darkness. They perceive darkness. You, the sensory, the mind and the sense organs are lighting up the darkness. When the darkness goes away and the sun comes, then you are lighting up the sun and all of the things that are revealed by the light of the sun. But in the end, the main luminary, the innermost luminary, is only consciousness. And even the illumination of the sun, the knownness of the sun, requires consciousness. Right? So that's why they say Jhana Me instead of the sun, right? So that you know that the everything, including the sun itself, shines after consciousness. So that's how the consciousness of being known. Make sense? So they're using a drishtanta and then bringing the drishtanta, the illustration, back to your own being. I think one thing in terms of really these illustrations and drishtantas are so important, because they have to help you to see what the Upanishads are actually seeing, because a drishtanta, an illustration, is actually giving you an illustration in a familiar situation. That's what a drishtanta is. It gives you a familiar situation which you know about, which you have experienced, and then that helps you to understand what is unfamiliar, the unfamiliar relationship of yourself to the world, for instance. It's using a drishtanta that you know to help you see, to actually see what is being said here. And so here, the second line, for instance, if I'm talking to you, or if the teacher is talking to you, you know, about how the five sense organs indwelling in this body, the mind, the buddhi, the mind, etc., that are indwelling, those, your mind is fine. Your buddhi is fine. The manas is fine. The chitta, the memory, is fine. The ahankara is fine. The antakarana of the mind is perfectly fine. But if you take away the sense organs one by one, your experience of the world is not available to you. If I am blind, my mind is fine. I am fine. The ahankara is fine. The I notion is fine. I'm meaning I notion here. You are fine. Your mind is fine. Your body is fine. But the eyes don't work. And so now, without the eyes, this sense of sight is gone. If you're deaf, then the ears don't work. So the sense of hearing is the non-functioning. So you can't hear any sound. Say you lose the eyes and the ears. Now there is no experience for you of the world of sight and the world of sound. And you can go through all five sense organs, you remove one at a time, and each one of those windows, those holes that consciousness utilizes, is shut down. And so what that would mean, imagine all five sense organs not being available to you for whatever reason. That could happen. It has happened. If you're somebody like Helen Keller, that has happened. You know, then that's very challenging, because you actually don't have an experience of the world, but your body is fine. Your body is fine. But even I think this, it's kind of weird, but if you were to remove all five sense organs, you wouldn't have any knowledge of your body even, because no sense of touch. And so you would just be, in terms of your experience, just the Atma, the self, and the Antakarna, and the mind. That would be your world. It would be similar to the dream world, because in the dream world, with the going into causal condition, that kind of detachment of the mind from the physical sense organs and the body, it is just having a world of its own. This physical body, for all experiential purposes, doesn't exist. It may exist, but not for you, because you have no way to relate to it, no way to experience it. So the physical body, the knownness of the physical body to you, is really due to the five sense organs. You have to remember the sense of touch. One thing that causes the main, what we call very solid identity with my being and this body is the sense of touch, because it runs through the entire body. And so then the body is a conscious being, in the sense that it feels itself as a conscious being, because the sattva, that reflecting entity of the sense of touch, runs through the whole thing. So you can understand why the identification with this body is so profound. The sense of touch doesn't go out here, right? And so the sense of being a conscious being stops at this body, right? Because the body reflects consciousness. It goes through the prana, reflects consciousness. Not from its own standpoint, but it is known. It is felt, it is known, it is objectified. The mind also reflects consciousness, it is objectified. And then the buddhi, all of these things are objectified. So on all enjoying consciousness, which goes as far as this physical body. And so I am like a lamp in a physical body that has holes in it. And the holes are the five sense organs. But now, remove the five sense organs, remove those holes, and then there's just the self-shining of myself, plus the interior experiences of the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, but there is no access to this physical body. It helps to understand that, because the physical body is really objectified by you through your sense organs, and without the sense organs you would have no experience of it. We also experience that the sense organs, as being themselves when they're functioning, as being me, these are my eyes and these are my ears and my sense of touch. They're part and parcel of me. And that's how I take it. I am this body and these are my sense organs. Right? But then we just said, well, if the sense organs, you'd be able to continue your existence, but if you lost the sense organs, you wouldn't have those instruments that would allow you to objectify not only the body, but this physical world. Those sense organs not functioning, this experience is not belonging to you. And you are fine. You may not like not having sense organs, but what I mean is that your being is fine, and your mind is fine. If a person loses their sight, no one wants to lose their sight, you know? But if you do, you still have your mind. It's not that you lose your mind. You lose your sense organs. It's not that you lose you, the me, or the mind. You lose the sense organs, and then you lose the experience of the sight of the world. Say if you lose all of them, you lose the experience of the world and the experience of the body. But now say we're talking about our sense organs as me. These are mine. We don't usually say, I am my eyes. I say, the eyes are mine. They belong to me. They're part and parcel of me. They're part to the whole of me. Because I take myself to be the body, mind, sense organs. Your sense organs only function if your mind is using them. Otherwise, they're just instruments that are hanging out there. They work fine. They're perfect. They're fine. But you're not using them because you're daydreaming. Right? You're daydreaming, or you're asleep, or you're in dream. You're dreaming. You're not using your physical sense organs when you're dreaming, or when you're asleep. They're not operational. So your sense organs themselves are just instruments that you can utilize. You can say, well, these are my instruments, right? But saying they're my instruments is different than saying that they are me, that they belong to me. They don't belong to you as part of yourself. They're instruments that you can utilize when you want to. The mind actually can utilize when you want to. So this identification, not only with the body, but with the sense organs, and you realize, you know, those sense organs are sometimes just at rest. They're not being used at all. And your being as the subject is still there exactly as it was before. Even when the instruments go to sleep or they're not being used, it's not like, oh no, I've lost part of myself. No, you don't even think like that. It's not, I've lost part of myself. You're saying, no, I've lost these sense organs. I'm here without my sense organs. It's like, I'm here without my glasses, you know? I'm here without my hearing aid. It's not that something's happened to you, there's something happened to the sense organs. And that's very clear, except that we don't have a context to take that all the way to recognize that my being, the me, the self that I am, actually is absolutely free from the body and the sense organs. When I'm utilizing the sense organs, also I'm thinking about my mind was daydreaming. I missed everything you just said. I missed everything you said. You know? Or I was reading this book, and now I'm on page 10. I don't know how in the heck I got to page 10. I have no idea, because all of those pages were nothing but my mind was elsewhere. I was just mechanically going through this, but nobody was home. I was off in my daydream. So as we start to really understand this, the mind is interesting in reference to this. It's either using the sense organs, or the sense organs are operating mechanically with nobody home, nobody using them, so nothing happens. The mind also is something which it's more innermost to the sense organs in the body, more subtle. But the mind, of course, we have a great identity with. I am me. I am my mind. I am the one who is present, who is thinking, who is assimilating all of these experiences, you know, who has this body, mind, sense organs, you know. What would I do without my mind? I mean, my mind is me, you know. So I am my mind. My mind is my innermost witness. However, the mind itself is illumined. I'm aware of my mind. There is a subject-object relationship with my mind. Right? And there also, the mind keeps changing. Right? So the lamp is moving inward. Right? The lamp keeps moving inward. The lamp that lights up these holes, if you block the holes, then the lamp, nothing happens to the lamp. The lamp that's inside the pot, say you block off all the holes, the lamp doesn't care. It's just shining exactly as it was before. Say you blocked off, say it's got five holes in it, and the pot has five holes in it, and you block off, or something happens, mud gets thrown at the pot, and two of the holes are filled. Two of the holes get filled. What does the lamp think? What happens to the lamp, to the light? Nothing. Nothing. It doesn't care. It doesn't even know that it's going out through those holes. It's just light. It's just the light. It's just consciousness, conscious being. It's not thinking. It's not thinking. The mind is thinking. It's not thinking. It's not remembering. It is the luminary because of which thinking is known. In deep sleep, what happens to the thinking or to the experience of the mind? What happens to the mind in deep sleep? It's in what we say causal condition. We say causal condition because the same mind comes back up, comes back out. But in deep sleep, it's not available. And it's in its causal unmanifest condition. Same mind comes back. That's why we say causal. But when it's in causal condition, what is the experience? The experience from the external standpoint is just one big, in the Sanskrit, just one big, I don't know. Without the words. Because the knower, the instruments of knowledge, the five sense organs and the mind, both are in causal condition. You don't have a dream and then you're looking here and there while you're dreaming. Sense organs are gone if you're dreaming, if you're daydreaming, or if you're in deep sleep. Mind is not available also. It's available in dream, but it's not available in deep sleep. It's in its causal condition. And so you don't have a death experience when the mind goes into its causal condition. In fact, we're really relieved. That's why we like to go to bed. Mm-hmm. So we can have this resolution of experience, just a big, huge time out in the deep sleep. Nothing happens to me. Nothing happens to consciousness. But the knower known relationship is in unmanifest condition. The relationship of seer seen, hearer heard, thinker thought, emoter emotion, this dwaita between the subject, this duality between the subject and object is not present in deep sleep. And why would I want that? Don't you think that's a type of annihilation? Let's go to sleep and annihilate myself. Because I am this body, mind, sense organs. Why would I want an experience that in which the body, mind, sense organs is not functioning, is in causal condition? Causal condition because it comes up. Because I don't go into causal condition. I can never go into causal condition. I'm the one that illumines the causal condition. Not as a knower, but as me. As just conscious being that I am. I'm not a knower and I'm not a known. I'm the consciousness which illumines whatever comes into my wake. And so if what comes into my wake is a mind in unmanifest condition, just pure jnanam really, pure ignorance, pure unknowing, then I illumine that. And when the mind wakes up out of the causal condition, then the mind can say, that was a great sleep. I didn't know anything at all. It was wonderful. I was so wonderful. And Swamiji, you know, he tells so many jokes about this, how much we love we need the perfect mattress. In fact, it's so funny, usually Prakash or Edward, when I'm up here, one of the two of them watch Tibby, you know. But during the camp, there's some overlap where both Edward and Prakash were here. So my neighbors who love Tibby and wish that she would want was a little bit, she's just starting to really warm up to them now. I asked them if they would mind sleeping at my house so that Tibby wouldn't be alone there at night. I just don't like that for her. And they love her and she's started to come around them and come into their house once in a while. So I asked, can you do that? And they were excited, especially his girl, James' girlfriend, she thinks Tibby is, I do, she loves her. Okay. So does James. But James says, I can do that, but what's your mattress? I don't know if I'll be able to sleep on it. Because he needs a back problems or whatever, he needs a certain kind of mattress. And I said, my mattress is really good. It's a Kowalski mattress. It's a wonderful, wonderful mattress. I think that you'll probably like it. He said, well, maybe I can test it out. I said, yeah, why don't you test it out? And then he said, well, you know, even if I can't sleep on it, Ellen can stay there or I can all bring up, you know, what I can sleep on. It'll be fine. You know? And I thought of this story. I need to have a really comfortable mattress. And the pillows have to be right, of course. And then I like a really wonderful comforter, you know, so that I can just go to bed, cuddle up, completely just relax and blot out everything, including the ahankar. There's even nobody there to say, here I am in this wonderful bed, having such a beautiful sleep. That person's not there. I just go into a state of complete, it's a non-dual, lazy man samadhi, somebody says. It's a non-dual, pure ignorance. I don't have any of the problems of the world. I don't have any of my complexes or my worries or the things that I don't know how are going to take place. Just all of it goes. And so sleep is something that that for most of us really enjoy, you know. And if you're not able to get a good, solid, deep sleep because there's noise and this or that, that's really kind of disturbing. It's disturbing because I want deep, deep sleep, you know. And then, of course, if an alarm goes off in the morning, you know, Swamiji will joke and say, and you have to turn that button off and then just go back into that kind of liminal bliss state, you know. Just for a little longer, just, you know. And then just enjoy them. Just, okay, I have to get up. But you love to be with yourself. You're with yourself. Nothing else. Just with yourself. So part of the greatest experience is when you are just waking up and the world hasn't crashed in on you, you know, or all of your responsibilities have not crashed in on you. And so there's just the ananda, your mind is still just absorbed in yourself and you just enjoy being with you. Because you are the ananda, you are the Satchidananda, that's who you are, the ananda, the wholeness. That which is most beloved is your own being. And so that deep sleep is very important for us. And even the deep sleep app actually shines after me because I'm still there. You remember it when you wake up. There's no death experience. I still am. But when you go into deep sleep, the mind goes into, and the sense organs go into their causal condition, there is no perception. There is no knowership. This knower known, seer seen, that belongs to the mind, thinker thought. All the dvaita, subject-object duality, belongs to the body-mind sense organs, not to you. Yourself is not a knower. It is the conscious being that you are, the me, this very intimate me that is you, that is you right now, with or without knowledge, doesn't matter. Me is me. That me itself just illumines all experience. It's the luminary. It's not performing a function of knowing. We can even use the sun for a drishtanta, an illustration of that. The sun is not deciding to look at this or that. Let me light up the world right now. Let me cast a little bit more light over there. No, not at all. It is itself a luminary. And it doesn't need another sun to light it up. It's not knowing anything, but by its light, everything shines after it. It doesn't, this bhantam anubhati, because of its light, everything is lit up. But everything is, without its light, it's not lit up. So for me also, which I'm the one because of whose light, whose consciousness, the sun itself is lit up, as is darkness. But I'm not doing anything. I'm not saying, oh, let me light that up, or let me turn my attention over here. That all belongs to the mind. I am just me, simple, the simple me that is you right now. It's just totally, your body, mind, sense organs are superimposed on it because there's a lack of discrimination there. So that me that I am is itself just me. Just me who is self-evident, and that self-evident me lights up everything else that comes in my way, including darkness. Light, darkness, knowledge, ignorance, it lights up your ignorance. Do you know Chinese? No. How do you know? How do you know that you, how do you know what you don't know? I know what I don't know. I check out my mind, I illumine my mind, and my mind says, do I know that? No. So you illumine what you know, you illumine what you don't know. So that your knowledge and your ignorance both take place in the absolute non-dual knowledge consciousness of your being. But your being is not a knower. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.